Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I have to tell you, I'm going to make a confession at the very outset, and I hope that you'll be patient with me. I had worked on a shear for the last few days, and then in the wee hours of this morning, I made a strategic decision that my neshama compelled me to change the focus of the shear. Couldn't help it, my neshama did it, and I followed the dictates of my neshama. So if you will see that it takes a certain turn during the course of the shiur, you will know exactly what is at work. I am always moved at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, because we are so inextricably intertwined with the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha. The great journey of the Jewish people begins with God appearing to Abraham and telling him, Lech Lecha me'arzecha me'ulatecha u'beit avicha. Leave your home, your father's house, your homeland, and go to the land that I will show you. Miracle of miracles. 4,000 years later, against all odds, we're still here. Not only we're still here, we're the focus of this whole world. Smallest people on the face of this earth. We are the focus. Now, what's fascinating, first, I want to take you to number 2 down at the bottom. A pasuk in Yeshayahu, Isaiah says, Shimu Eli Rodefei Tzedek, listen to me, O pursuers of righteousness. Habitu El Tzur Chutzavten, O seekers of Hashem, look to the rock from which you were hewn, Ve'el Makevet Bornu Kartem, and at the hollow of the pit from which you were dug. Where were you dug from? Where were you hewn from? From Avraham and Sarah. And Yeshayahu goes on to say, Habitu el Avraham avichem, take a look at your father Avraham. Ve'el Sarah techololchem, and take a look at Sarah who bore you. Ki echod korosiv, I called him one, or when he was yet alone, va'arbarkehu, I blessed him, va'arbehu, and I made him many. My favorite Haggadah you may know from over the years is the Haggadah of the Baal Aruch HaShulchan, the Leil Shimurim Haggadah, of Yechiel Michal HaLevi Epstein, who says the following in his opening comment on the Haggadah of Pesach. He brings this pasuk in Yeshayahu, and he has his own unique pshat. He says that the Navi Yeshayahu is telling the Jewish people the uniqueness of their very existence. You were brought into the world by a miracle. Take a look at your father and your mother, Avram and Sarah, ki echod kerosiv. They were destined to be but one. Neither Avram and Sarah were destined to have children. It was a miracle that they had children, which means you were born as an act of God, as a great miracle. And that's exactly how you continue on throughout all of history. That miracle was created by God to bring about the birth of the Jewish people, was not to be in vain. He made that miracle because he was going to make sure that we're going to continue marching through history, and 4,000 years later we sit over here in Yerushalayim and we are able to bear elegant testimony to that being the absolute truth. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, if a Jew wishes to see a miracle today, he need only look at himself. the greatest of all miracles is that even one Jew exists in our day and age. Rabbi Yaakov Emden in his Siddur, the Yaakov Emden Siddur, in his introduction, he writes, I swear the existence of the Jewish people is a greater miracle than all the miracles that took place at the time of the Exodus from Egypt. Greater miracle than them all. And then, of course, I once, I think about a year or so ago, I told you, one day King Louis the 14th asked Pascal, prove to me that there are miracles. And Pascal took a look at Louis the 14th and he said, the Jews, Your Majesty, the Jews. We're here a long time, and that long time began with the words, Lech Lecha, Mei Arzecha, Mei Molavetcha, Mei Beit Avicha. And Avram and Asara, who by dint of nature were incapable of having children, are going to become the parents of an eternal people. A great miracle. Boy, what we can testify about what the Jewish people have been through during the course of the last 4,000 years. Even if we just testify to the last 60 years, we're already making a great statement on behalf of the Jewish people. That's the beginning of this year. The second aspect of this year, I'm going to take you on this first sheet down to letter F. That's all the Rashi. I hope that there will be time to get back to some of the other Rashis, about which there's a great deal to say. But this Rashi struck me. I mean, I've learned it 1,000 times, but you know, every time you learn it, something new comes up.
Leave
your land. So Rashi says, "Vahalo kvar yotzum ishamim of it." He had already left the land with his father, Ufor at Choron. From Ur Kasdim, he had already arrived in Choron. The end of Parshas Noach tells us of the journey of Terach and his children from Ur Kasdim to Choron. Elokach amaloa, this is what God said to him. Hitrachet ol misham. Go even further away from there. V'tzei beit avicha. He had come with his entire family from Ur Kasdim to Choron. Now he tells him to leave his family. Go to the land Asher Arecha that I will show you. Lo gilo lo et ha'aretz liyad. God did not reveal to him the land immediately. Kedei lechavavo ve'enov, in order that the land should become more beloved in his eyes. The idea of the anticipation, the surprise. He's not certain where he's going to go to. Kedei lechavavo ve'enov, v'lotet lo schar, and to give him reward, al kol dibur v'dibur. Because as he travels, he's going to need directions. What are those new schnitzigs they have? These GPS, which stands for? Anybody know what it stands for? Global Positioning System. Avraham Avinu has God's positioning system. He comes to a crossroads and he doesn't know where to go. Then he waits for instructions from on high. Go right, go left, make a turn, go down. God is going to appear to him and communicate with him every step of the way. This is the first of Avraham's 10 great tests. Incidentally, maybe it's not so incidentally, the last of the tests, the Akedah, is also introduced by the same words, Lech Lecha, go El Eretz Hamoriah. And Rashi is going to bring it. Similarly, Lech Lecha, Rashi doesn't bring the word Lech Lecha, but it says, Kachas Binchas Yechitcha, Asher Ahasas Yitzchak, take your son, your only one whom you love, Isaac, and take him to the land of the Moriah. Do you know what it means? It means that every step of the way, since God hasn't revealed him the land as here, and God hasn't revealed to him the mountain as there, he needs God's positioning system. Rav Kook writes in the introduction to his Sidur Olad Re'iyah, one can receive prophecy from God only if he is in a state of happiness and joy. Do you understand what that means? Superhuman. 3 days that Avraham Avinu is going to the Akedah, he has to be in a state of joy, or the entire undertaking would end in tragic failure and be aborted. Because if he can't receive directions when he comes to a fork in the road, it all ends. He has to be in a state, because a Navi can only receive prophecy as long as he is in a state of happiness. God doesn't speak to the depressed. He takes care of them. He's concerned about them, but he cannot communicate with them. So here it is. He's traveling to Eretz Yisrael. He's traveling to Har Moriah, and God keeps talking to him. And then Rashi says, the Chayotzevo, there's another example of this. Ukro'o eleho et hakrio asher anochi dover elecha. Yonah is told to go to Nineveh. God doesn't reveal to him immediately what it is that he's supposed to say to him. Call unto Nineveh, tell Nineveh, that which I will tell you. That means that there's going to have to be an anticipation and a waiting, and God is going to have to communicate to him a number of times until finally he's going to reveal to him, say those 5 words, oh, that boy young, the Nineveh Ne'apachet, in another 40 days, Nineveh is going to be destroyed. What struck me when I read this, of course, was, what an example to bring. Yonah is on the boat that's about to sink, and he is asked, who are you? What's your Tu'dat Zehut number? Where do you come from? Where are you going? What's your profession? And he tells them that his Tu'dat Zehut is Ivri Anochi. I am a Hebrew. What's so significant about that? It's very significant. It's in this Sedra, later on this Sedra, after Lot is captured, there's one man who flees from the field of battle. Vayavo HaPoet, the one who fled from the battle, came by Yagen, and he told Avraham HaIvri. Avram the Ivri. Why is he called Ivri? So there are a number of shot. One shot is that he came from the family of Aver. The second is that he spoke the language of the Hebrews. And the third shot, the real identity of Avraham Avinu is Kol Ha'olam Kulo Me'Ever Echad V'Hu Me'Ever Hasheni. The whole world is on one side and he stands on the other side. Avraham Avinu stands up against a whole world. A whole world has sunk into idolatry, and there's one man who begins a journey throughout all of history with such courage, with such determination, brilliant human being, a human being, but all of mankind. All of mankind is indebted to Avraham Avinu ad hayom hazeh. How many times have I told you about Paul Johnson's introduction, his prologue and his epilogue to his history of the Jews? He's a non-Jew, Paul Johnson. And he wrote a history of the Jews because he wanted to trace the journey of one man called Abraham. And he says the chances are if there wouldn't have been an Abraham, chances are nobody would have made that discovery ever. And the world would have been a pretty miserable place in which to live. Avraham Avinu was the one that is the great genius. Avraham Avinu, more than a genius. Avraham Avinu has courage. The courage of his convictions. And even though when he says what he has to say, he knows that he is positioning himself against the halls of power. And because he's courageous, because he's not frightened, and because he knows that he speaks the truth. Therefore, Avraham Avinu's message continues to reverberate throughout the world until this very day. Alright? There may be time yet to get back to what we have on the first sheet, but before we look any further, turn over to the other side. And on the left-hand side of the sheet, and I think maybe I put it on the left-hand side of the sheet because since I read it yesterday in the afternoon, I was so upset. I was upset, you cannot imagine how upset I was. That's from Time magazine. For years after his 10-year term as Israel's chief rabbi, Avraham Shapiro was considered a sage by the religious right. Yet for many Israelis, the Talmudic scholar was a hardline zealot whose theology that Israel was land given by God to the Jews, anchored the settlers' movement, and helped bring about the assassination of peace advocate Yitzhak Rabin. I've never heard a sentence as ugly, as vicious, as filthy, and as false as that. And it comes at the right time. We're going to go through it this week. All of you, you're all guilty of the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. You and your children and your children's children. What a... You know what it is? This week is the annual Jewish blood libel. Jewish blood libel against fellow Jews. To say something like that about a man as great as Avraham Shapiro, for that matter, to say it about any Jew who was not given on the earth. We're not responsible, we're not guilty, and what has torn apart this country is precisely that. And there are two people in particular, I'm sorry, you know, it's been a long, long time since I've spoken about these issues, but this is extremely, extremely significant. I remember the guy who wants to give away the Harabayit, Ramon, saying at the Jerusalem Theater, after the assassination, Nightline was held over here. Who was the one that was the anchor man of Nightline? Ted Koppel. Chaim Ramon, the kisser, the big kisser. And then Chaim Ramon is the one who said, "The right, we will crush them." Quote, unquote. We're all guilty. We're all guilty. We're all guilty. Ehud Barak, the night of the assassination, I remember hearing it, accused everybody on the right. We all pulled the trigger together with the, you know. This has been the event, the terrible, tragic event that has torn us apart. I cannot talk with somebody who thinks that I'm a killer. And here it is. not Time Magazine who's guilty here. Time Magazine has simply been writing exactly what the left has been saying. Avraham Shapira, yet for many Israelis, the Talmudic scholar, was a hardline zealot whose theology, by the way, that theology, let's read the theology, that Israel was land given by God to the Jews. That's all of Parshas Lech Lecha, and Vayera, and Chayei Sarah. Anybody doubts that? Is there a Jew around who doubts that the land was given by God to the Jews? That anchored the settlers movement? And then of course it brought to the assassination. This is so ugly. This is so terrible. I don't care who they write it about. But when it was written about a man like Avraham Shapira Zeved Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, who was a giant. When I talk about Avraham Avinu, and I talk about being courageous, that's the one word that comes to my mind to describe Rabbi Avraham Shapira. He was absolutely courageous. I see it this morning. Abraham Lincoln said, to sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men. I'm going to say it again. To sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men. Rabbi Avraham Shapira was not a coward. He was a courageous human being. He spoke out, and he spoke his mind with Torah dignity. Where's my... This is my address book. I still don't know how to put phone numbers into my cell phone. I'm not going to change, so here I have. It's falling apart already. It's falling apart, but this is my address book. On my address book, and this is already, I'm going to have to do it all over again because it's getting rubbed out. A quotation from Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. In 1993, there were a lot of good men who did nothing. There were a lot of cowards who were not men and remained silent. Not Rabbi Avraham Shapira. He spoke out forcefully, he spoke out fearlessly. You know, I'll spend a few minutes just telling you about how my own relationship with him began. I had not had any relationship of any significance for about 30, 40 years with any Godelby Yisrael. And then one night, just about in October, early October of 1993, which was a month after the handshake on the White House lawn, I get a call from Rabbi Nachum Rabinowitz, who's the Hashiva of the Yeshivat Hezder in Malei Adumim, and I get a call and he says, Shalom, exactly what you're trying to do, somebody else is trying to do. Mm-hmm. What was I trying to do? Soon after Oslo, I started calling my rabbi friends around the country. I wanted to call together a meeting of rabbis that we should stand up and protest. And one of the people that I had spoken to was a very, very good friend, Rabbi Rabinowitz. So he calls me at 12 o'clock at night and he says, you should know Rabbi Avraham Shapira. I hardly know him. I mean, I wasn't even sure who he was. Rabbi Avraham Shapira is trying to do the same thing. Why don't you join forces with him? And he gave me the name and the phone number of Rav Shapray Zelikovich, who was then the head of the yeshiva in Mavaseret, whom I didn't know. He just says, call him. It was a quarter after 12, 20 after, this was long. Time didn't make any difference then, and I called Rav Shapray, and Rav Shapray said, great, we're going to join forces. I already had a whole bunch of Chabonim with me, little me, you understand? And I finally met with Rabbi Avraham Shapira, and that started a relationship until nearly the very end of his life. And we established then the Ichud HaRabbanim, the Forum of Rabbis L'man Am Yisrael, for Eretz Yisrael, for Am Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. And there was quite a bit of activity that we did in an attempt to kill the Oslo Accords. I think most fair-minded, intelligent people now agree that Oslo was a tragedy, a profound tragedy, in its conception and the way it was carried out. But there was one man who stood up and spoke out. I have here in front of me, the Psak Halacha, the halachic position that was taken by the Yehud HaRabbanim L'man Am Yisrael V'Eretz Yisrael, and that was issued, I remember that day very well, July 12th, 1995. It was already the 20th, 30th meeting I had with Rav Avraham. His house was not only me, there were others who were there. Rav Nachum Rabinowitz was Rav Dov Lior, Rav Chaim Druckmann, I mean a whole star-studded cast of people. And that was when we issued the Psak Halacha about Siruf Pekudah, that soldiers should refuse orders to remove Jews from their homes. I remember it very well, just to get into the house, you had to go through a sea of newsmen and TV cameras and all the rest. They had an inkling that something was going to happen very significant that day. But the way it was done, Rabbi Avraham expressed his opinion, and then he asked each and every individual to express themselves, say what you have to say about it. Went through the whole room. Only one person disagreed, but everybody else did agree that you can't call on Israeli soldiers to remove Jews from their homes. What nobody ever bothered doing was really reading the Psak Halacha. The Psak Halacha wasn't really that soldiers should refuse. I'm going to read and translate. It's down at the bottom of the right-hand column. Af pam lo hemit sahalat chayalav b'nei matzav bo natzlu lif'ol neged matzponam adati. Tzal has never put its soldiers in a position where they would have to act against their religious conscience or their ethical or national. Therefore, we call upon the government and the leaders of the army not to place soldiers in a position where they would be faced with an impassable dilemma. The point wasn't that they should refuse orders. The point was that the government should never put a soldier in that kind of a position. Not to put soldiers at the top of the second talum, the matzav, in a situation bo aleihem litlabet, where they have to be torn bein emunatam la'arachim aleihem banui orach chayim, between their faithfulness to those values upon which their entire lifestyle is built, lebein pekudat hatzava, and the orders given by the army. And therefore the last was we turn to the government and to the one who stands at the head of the government. They should not lend a hand to dividing the people in Tzal and to strengthen the unity of the Jewish people at this extremely difficult moment. This didn't get across. I was interviewed time and time again by all sorts of television stations, United States, Israel, Europe. And I pointed this out. I don't know if anybody ever wanted that should be pointed out. There was no intent to divide and destroy the army. By the way, this psak was reissued twice. I remember both of them. There were rumors, it was more than rumors, that the government was going to come in one day and move all of the residents, I don't want to use the word settlers if I can avoid it, the residents of Hebron out. So we hastily called a meeting of the Ikut HaRabbanim, and Rabbi Blom came. We had a few hundred Rabbanim in Kiryat Arba calling upon the government not to remove Jews from Hebron. Hebron! Our Hebron! And Rabbi Blom then again made clear soldiers should not do this. I remember we were on the bus. We were on the bus going back, and there were already radio reports that there's all sorts of strife going on in the government. It was later that Mother Gur told Rabbi Blom, because of the issue of that Sark that day in Hebron, they had indeed planned to remove all of the settlers. And they were frightened of what would happen. Rabbi Blom's courage simply stopped the evacuation, that's a very nice word, the exile of Jews from Hebron. What I'm saying is the following. There have not been many courageous people, unfortunately, during the course of the last 15 years when we needed courageous people. Rav Avram was one of the courageous people, and I felt privileged to be at his side at many very, very important meetings. So of course when I saw this ugliness, you understand, it hit me. Well, I'll tell you, it hit me even more, even maybe possibly for a personal reason. 3 days after the assassination, I find a letter in my mailbox. Somebody writes to me, Sadiqim Lachtom Nasus Ayidei Achedim. The righteous, their work is done by others. Basically accusing me of having assassinated Yitzchak Rabin Olav HaShalom. Such ugliness, such ugliness, and such a period of fear came down upon the religious community at Herzl, was terrified. I remember then the only courageous psak halacha that I gave is a number of members of my shul asked me whether they should line up to walk past the aron that was being in front of the Knesset. Even though I had great misgivings, I said absolutely. He was our prime minister, their prime minister, everybody's prime minister. A terrible tragedy has taken place, of which we're not guilty. What's worse about it all is, until today, this is the destruction of democracy in this country. If you express an opinion different than the government, you are anti-democratic. What was Rabbi Blom doing? What were we all doing? Come on, I see all your faces. You were all there by all of these demonstrations. You came face to face with the horses. We got to know them. I think the horses knew us. We were there. We were expressing our democratic right. We were opposed. And this is considered having assassinated a prime minister. And therefore, I tell you the truth, I think it's because of the left that we were never able to mourn the tragedy of that assassination. We were never able to. They robbed it from us. And I don't want to identify with anything that they identify with. Wait, your turn will start this week. When they start talking about Moreshet Rabin, the tradition, the Masorah that he left. We have a Masorah of Avraham Avinu. The Masorah of Avraham Avinu is that God gave this land to us, and nobody has the right to give it away. And that was the Psak Halacha that was said over here. First sentence, all based on Parshas Lech Lecha, Anu Kovim Sheyesh Iser Torah.
And you know what? In 1995, nobody was talking about removing settlers or residents from their homes in Yehuda Veshomeron. They were talking about taking down a number of military camps. And those military camps, by virtue of the fact that they were military camps, means that they belonged al kidin, they belonged to Klal Yisrael, and they were the first line of defense. So Anu Kolim Shesh Isha Torah Lefanos Machanot Tzahal Ulahavir Hamakom Rishut Goyim. You're not allowed to remove camps of Tzahal and give them over to non-Jews, because there's a bitul mitzvah asay. It stands in opposition to the positive commandment of living in Eretz Yisrael, and there's also Sakonos Nefoshes, the Sakonos Lekiyum HaMedina. Everybody now knows that whatever is taking place, mamish endangers this people. Pikuach Nefesh, that's what we're talking about. One of the refreshing things, and I've been reading everything that's been written about Kavavon, and one of the refreshing things is, except in one case that I will read to you, there are no miracles that are said about him. You know, I get a little hot under the collar. You start reading about the Gedolei Yisrael, what miracles they did, and that they were able to foresee the future. They, I tell you, they say more stuff about some Gedolei Yisrael in all of these books. They still say more about them than Moshe and Yishayahu and Yechezkel. I'm not so convinced about it all. I'm not so convinced. There's only one story I say over here. You know, because whatever they write about him, all is related to the fact that he was a brilliant Talmud Chacham who worked very, very hard. He was constantly learning. He was a true Torah scholar. That was his strength. He wasn't an orator at all. It was even difficult to understand him, but his students were able to understand him. He was a brilliant scholar. He was a great posek. And he was fearless. The one mofes, it seems that there was somebody who wrote a history of Merkav Rav, writes that a gentleman who was married to the granddaughter of Rav Kook and said a shir in Yeshivas Merkav Rav didn't have, he and his wife didn't have children. But when so young, like he put in one year on Motzi Yom Kippur, Rav Arya Levine, the Tzavik HaYerushalmi, put together a Beis Din. He invited Rav Shapiro and somebody called Rav Shaftai Shmueli, the three of them sat down together, and Rav Arya Levine said, "We, Beit Din Shalata, we who are the best in here, Gozrim, we make a gzeirah that such and such person should have children." How do you like that? Not so Yom Kippur. It was probably only Rabbi Arya Levine could do something. I'm sure it was not Rabbi Avraham Shapira that had anything to do with it. They were holding him down there against his will. Ukeshen Shagoza Bezdin Shalmata, just as we down here, our Bezdin has decreed, so it shall be fulfilled, the Bezdin Shalmala. Of course, the story is told because that year they had children. Okay? That's the only mythos. Here I read another story about somebody that I know very well for well over 40 years. There's a Toein Rabbani, a rabbinic advocate called Ratzvi Weinman. He's one of the tough guys. When Rabbi Avram was a dayan and he was representing a woman before his Beis Din, so he said that the first time Rabbi Avram saw him, he walked over to him and he told him, "Dalacha, you should know that if while we're dealing this case about this woman, you're going to hold up the procedure of giving the get even for a moment for a reason that's not justified, then the responsibility is going to be upon your soul if this woman will do terrible things as a result. Just remember, don't you hold up the get." And he was terrified. He never met the man before in his life. So Avram had a feeling, most probably, that this guy is, you know, what's a toin chabanira lawyer supposed to do? You know, drag things out. So he says, not in my court. That's not going to happen over here. Another friend of mine writes, lives in the same building with Rav Avram, and here this is going to be a classic which I believe really explains to you what was unique about this man. He lives in the same building that Rav Yehoshua Magnus lives on the second or third floor on that house on Circus Street, Circus. Anyway, some of the people in the building or him, and you know, they wanted to make an Erev Chatzeres, an Erev around the building, if anybody's Nachman doesn't want to necessarily use the Erev of the city. But before you do it, you know, you go, Rav Avram lives in the same building. So he went to Rav Avram. Rav Avram said to him, and the people in Yerushalayim are not carrying up it in? You're going to cast aspersions on them? Under no circumstances. Finish. All over. Somebody came to him with some kind of a question. He wanted to do something. Do something. Rav Avram asked him, what does your father do? No, doesn't do that. Under no circumstances. You're stronger than your father? It's a whole approach. That there's an Erev around the city that was made by Chabonim, Shechemim, this is it. That's it. I can't help it. I live in Harnov, I have three Erevs around me. I feel, I'm caught in a web of Erevs. Can't get out of it. This one doesn't like that Erev, the other one doesn't like the other Erev. Incidentally, and maybe not incidentally, it's precisely the same reason that Chabonim was strong for Het Mechira. Strong for Het Mechira. What are you talking about? I'm just in the middle of writing something that I may publish that I don't know what's going on. And I could say that this is exactly what was going on in Rav Avram's mind. All the batatzes most probably provide food in Shemitah year for 150,000, 20,000 people. Today's Jerusalem Post says, gives us the date in December on which we're going to be blessed with the produce coming in from Gaza. Yeah. Oh. Hamas, you understand? Umala Korva Oretz, all of Eretz will be full of Hamas. Alright? And Otsar Haaretz, which I use, in fact, provides, we know that there are 22,000 families that have signed up, which means therefore that they translate this into 150,000 people. That means between Batatzes and Otsar Haaretz and all of the rest, 300,000 or 350,000 Jews are provided for. What about the other 5 million? There are 5 million Jews living in this country. I'm writing this to a friend of mine who's terrible, friend of mine, an acquaintance who's terribly opposed to that. I say to him, you're not going to touch it, you're not going to eat it, but what do you want? Another 5 million Jews cannot be somech on giants of halacha over the last 120 years who are in favor of the head of the Mechira? Who are you going to tell them that? And if you say the head of the Mechira is no good, you know what you're saying? You're saying that 5 million Jews in this country are reading treif. Now that's pretty rough stuff. You can't talk Lashon Hara about Klal Yisrael. God doesn't like people who talk Lashon Hara about Klal Yisrael. And then you're of course telling us that all of these Rabbanim Gedolim who were summoned from the Yitzchak Elchanan down to the present day who were in favor of that, and the figure, they didn't know what they were talking about. Well, nonsense, a terrible thing. But I don't want to go into that now. I don't remember that. We'll save that for another year. Rav Avram was a brilliant, brilliant man. He was courageous. He was fearless. He had a feeling for the masses of people. he was against all of this kind of elitism. Oh yeah, classic other. Oh, another example. Somebody wanted to start a yeshiva for children who come from homes where there are no TVs. I mean, there are many schools like that. By the way, there are many schools like that in this city and in Bnei Brak. What are you talking about? So he got very upset. All right? And then after that, you're going to make a yeshiva only for Rabbanim, children of Rabbanim. Then you're going to make another yeshiva only for children of Rabbanim. And then you're going to make another yeshiva only for children of Arbed Dins. Leaders of the best. Where will it end? Schools are for all of Klal Yisrael. You have to take in all children. That was an approach, a Klal Yisrael approach. One of the, what can be seen as, no, I'll say the way I said it. It came to me, it was a week ago, Shabbos, I think. It says in Parashat Bahar, and this, I think I can describe Rav Avraham with this. It says in Parashat Bahar, the Parashat of Shmita and Yovel. Then it says, the Chitom, if you're going to say, man, Rochal, Bashonah, Hashviz, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? So God says, V'tzivisi es birkosi, I will command that my blessing should come, that there will be enough in the sixth year to tide you over until the next crop. So I said, and I want you to understand it the way I said it, or the way I think it, if it comes out right. The Torah is saying that the question you have to ask and the one you have to answer is, man nocha, what will we eat? If you're answering only a question that is, ma ochal, what will I eat? That's not an answer. I'll have my otzar ha'aretz. I'll have my badatz. The other 5 million people, who cares? The Torah says you're supposed to ask a Klal Yisrael question. Man nochal, what are we going to eat? And the only answer today, as it's been for the last 120 years, the only answer to Man Nochal is at the Mechira. I got that off my chest. I say that this represents the thinking of Rav Avraham. This represented the feeling, it goes back, it's tradition. That was the thinking of Rav Kook. That was the thinking of Rav Herzog. We're talking about giants. These are giants. And not only because Rav Herzog gave me Smicha, he was a giant even without that. You understand? Should I tell you that story? 1956. Okay, now we'll save that for another time. I'll tell you what was fascinating about that story. Oh yeah, this is, it's related to Rav Avraham. There are a number of people that Rav Herzog put on his bed bin. Rabbanut HaRashit. Two of his Tav Dayanim, two young people. One was called Rav Avraham Shapira. He was young then. This is 55, 56. And there was another one called Yosef Sholem Elyashiv. I went to Yivavu L'chayim. So I went to Rav Herzog, I wanted to get smicha. So he told me that in order to get smicha, I have to undergo two tests. One is a test on Yoredei, on Hilchos Beheder. And then, if I take that test, I come to him and he gives you a test on Gemara, you know. So he sends me, gives me an address of a fellow who lives in Meir Sharon called Yosef Sholem Elyashiv. I should go to him to get this bechir. I'll never forget that day. It was a day on which there was a civil defense drill. That was the word. A civil defense drill. Now the law was the following: if you're caught in the street, they slap you on a stretcher and take you straight to the hospital. So here it is. The drill starts, and that's the time I have to get to Rav Elyashiv's house. So I felt like I was a KGB Nick, and I was going from one alleyway to the next. I would dart into a hallway and inch my way through. Meanwhile, I look out at the streets, I see the kids from Meir Shalom are running through the streets. And they grab them, slap them onto a stretcher, in for a ride to the hospital. They've never been in a car before or anything. That for them, it was like Yehuda. It was a great day. They had something to tell their Eimagloch. I finally made it to Rabbi Yashin's house. I will not tell you. I will not tell you about that. Only because of my profound and great modesty. I can't tell you. I can't tell you about that. But basically, he approved my knowledge of this is the Heter, and he sent me back to Rav Herzog, and I took another Bechina there, which I also cannot tell you about. Anyway, I got smicha. But Rav Herzog had the Mechira. Rav Unterman had the Mechira. One of the strongest on behalf of Heter Mechira is surprisingly none other than Rabbi Avadi Yosef. His tshuva, his response on Heter Mechira is awesome. But the point that I wanted to make is Rabbi Avram always asked himself the man know-how question: what will be best for Klal Yisrael? It was never the ma'ochal. Yeah, I can have for my children and like-minded people, you know, I'll have my own school. I'll have my own Erev. I don't want their Erev. I want my own Erev. That was not part of his thinking. Not at all. It was a clown style thinking. And therefore that gave him as well the courage to be in the forefront of the struggle for Eretz Yisrael. Aside from him and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, there were two people who were still alive at the beginning of the struggle, and they were Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria and Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who were side by side together with Rav Avraham in the great struggle. Otherwise, the silence across the Jewish religious world was tragic and it was deafening. If there's somebody who saved the covenant of the religious world, and there are things like, I spoke to many Gedolei Yisrael during that period of time. That's one thing I should never write and never tell about. Never write and never tell about. There were very few people. What did Abe Lincoln say? To sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men. The terrible thing? The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Let's go back to the first side. I just want to do E, at least learn the Rashi on E, because we may continue as we pick up talking about Avraham Avinu next week. Anyway, Tehei Nishmato Tzurah B'Tzorah Chaim, and he should be a male tzayish. I'm sure that he is pounding on the table up there before the Rebbeinu Shlomo right now. Cannot permit what they want to do right now. It cannot be permitted. Listen, I was looking through one of my notebooks, two notebooks this morning. I was looking through something. Nearly every speech of Russia began with, you know, we're facing a terrible crisis. I think Habonim have been saying that now for about 2,000 years or more. And the fact is, you know what the truth is? We are facing a crisis all the time. We're facing terrible crisis. You understand? Not enough that they're being off in Harabayit. That's not enough. They want the Kaisel, you understand? The Kabbalah should be theirs. Who was it? Chagai Semel wrote an article last week. Not Kotel HaMa'aravi, Kotel HaArabi. So, just take the memo. That's it. The Kotel's now become Arabi. We live in tragic times. We need people of courage. Let me just learn the Rashi. Dovaracha. God promises God promises him, God says to Abram, go from your land and your birthplace, to the house of your father, to the land that I will show you. A number of great promises. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. And your name will be great. So Rashi says, in Shemon Esrei we begin with Elokeinu Elokei Rezenu Elokei Avram Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov, and then the end of the bracha is going to be Baruch Atah Hashem Magen Avraham. The reason for this, Rashi explains, Gemara says, I will make you a great nation. That is when Jews say Elokei Avram the God of Avraham. V'avorechachon, I will bless you, Zeshonim. That is when we refer to God as Elokei Yitzchak, the God of Yitzchak. And I will make your name great. That is Sha'omlim when they say Elokei Yaakov, the God of Yaakov. Yachol, Rashi goes on to say, you host me the Kulam, that the end of the bracha, the ceiling of the bracha, would also be with all of them. Baruch Ata Hashem Mogein, Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. No. Yachol, you host me the Kulam, Talmud Lomar, V'Heyei Baracha. You will be the blessing. You will be the end of the bracha. The chosmin, with you, they conclude the blessing, the lovahem, and not with them. There's a great deal to be understood in the meaning of this Rashi. So, we will save it for next week, but I did see one of the great darshanim about 50, 60 years ago that... of all the brachas that God gave Avraham, the only one that really has been fulfilled throughout history is Vagad lo shemecha, I will make your name great. And that really brings me back to the beginning of this year. He said, everybody talks about us. Everybody's involved with us. Smallest people on the face of the earth, and we grab the world's attention. And it doesn't stop. They are God lo shemecha. You know, we can be meichel that. Give us a little bit goy gadol and avodechecha. That will go a long way. That we are God lo shemecha. Well, we have a lot yet to talk about Avraham Avinu. We'll continue next week. And I just want to say I felt very strongly that I had to speak about somebody to whom I was very close, and was so terribly, terribly maligned, and most probably in other sources as well, but you should know, Sar Begoto Nafal B'Yisrael, a prince and a great man, has fallen in Israel. Last week's. And you know, I didn't read it until yesterday. I don't know, I don't look at it anymore. I had no idea. I just saw it and just got upset. That's all I did was be upset.
You didn't speak about the second half of that term.